2 years ago, U.S. Cyber Command was brand new. The president had ordered its creation in order to coordinate and synchronize the cyber activities of all the military services, including recruiting a top-notch workforce. As General Keith Alexander, the new commander of CyberCom, told a House hearing in September of 2010, recruiting that workforce was one thing. Holding on to it in the face of the much higher salaries the private sector could offer was another.
We're getting a lot of good folks. You know, I'll tell you, it is a privilege and honor to see the great folks that we're getting in there. The key is, how do we retain them? Because everybody wants good people.
But 2 years into the military's workforce buildup, cyber commanders say the retention concerns have turned out to be mostly a non-issue. Vice Admiral Michael Rogers is the commander of the Navy's Fleet Cyber Command.
To be honest, we have exceeded my expectations. I can well remember one of my concerns early on as I became involved in this mission set was, how are we going to retain these men and women? I think the thing that's surprised me the most and heartens me the most, and what I ascribe to that retention, is the fact that increasingly these men and women view themselves as warriors. And that's one distinct advantage, I think, for us in uniform. While our civilian counterparts offer many opportunities and arguably advantage, the one area that they don't offer is the ability to be a warrior. And the workforce really seems to crystallize around that idea, as well as the broader Navy as a whole is very energized by the mission set, has great respect for its cyber partners, and goes out of its way to highlight to its cyber partners how well positioned they think they are for the future. And the workforce really responds well to that.
Lieutenant General Michael Basla, who just took over as the Air Force's chief information officer, says his service had a similar experience. He tells Federal News Radio the Air Force has seen no retention problems either.
We've called it an operational domain, a warfighting domain. And the folks involved in that understand that, and they want to be part of the fight. I have talked to warfighters. I'm talking about our airmen and fighter pilots. And they talk about having kinetic and non-kinetic options for each of their targets. So when you get this kind of mindset, the troops in the field that are providing this kind of capability get pretty excited.
Knowing they can't compete with the private sector on salary, the military services have calibrated their cyber recruiting strategies to emphasize less tangible career benefits, like training opportunities and operational experiences they can't find with industry. As Skip Runyon, the technical director for the Air Force's 39th Information Operations Squadron, told me earlier this year, they've also created career paths that let both officers and enlisted personnel stay in the cyber field for the entire period of their military service.
The money's better on the outside, got it, but when you're working with the right authorities here, you can do a lot of things that'll get you put in jail in the civilian side.
And are you finding that having that career path is enough sort of in the job satisfaction world to overcome the pay disparity between you and the private sector?
Sometimes. From the Air Force model, we've trained a lot of pilots for the airline industry. There's still going to be that draw to the private sector, but a lot of those pilots we've trained have gone on to become four-star generals. And we're looking for the same kind of career progression for our cyber officers and enlisted.
Major changes in oversight and governance from the Pentagon have helped with the workforce effort, according to Alan Powler, the research director at the not-for-profit SANS Institute. He says up until about a year ago, the headquarters element of the Defense Department was focused like a laser on the wrong things, compliance with certification and accreditation reports, rather than real cyber warfighter capability.
So the people that they highlighted were people with what we call soft skills. Good writing, good talking, everything except being able to actually secure a computer.
Powler says after a behind-the-scenes battle between the Pentagon and on-the-ground warfighters, that changed.
Then they went ahead and did it right. And the Air Force really is in the lead, but the Navy's right there with them, and now the Army is catching up. And all of them have focused on what we call mission-critical skills. So when you go take the training that, for example, the best in the military right now is somewhere between the 39th IOS of the Air Force and the Corey Station people also in Florida. You get really technical, hands-on, hard-nosed skills. That's not what they were testing at headquarters. So what I think is the best thing that's happened is the headquarters people have sort of discovered, they actually got a lot of feedback from the field, and they discovered they had been doing it wrong, and they're re-looking at it and looking at measuring proficiency instead of measuring book learning, and I'm very impressed.
While the military services all have their own specific training responsibilities and missions for cyber warriors, Alexander, the head of Cyber Command, has also emphasized the need for joint training so that when cyber warriors are tasked with a mission, they're all trained to the same standard, regardless of the uniform they wear. While joint training does exist today, the Defense Information Systems Agency is building on it in a relatively new effort that's being guided by the National Initiative for Cyberspace Education. Henry Sinkowitz is DISA's Vice Chief Information Assurance Executive.
Well, our vision is very clear. I mean, we believe that we're going to help establish a very robust cybersecurity workforce development and certification program that will help prepare DoD cyber warriors to operate and defend our networks in that increasingly threat-based environment. And we're going to be training them to one standard. As we move and transition the Department of Defense into the joint enterprise environment, that whole environment needs to be able to be supported by consistent, repeatable behaviors. There are going to be service-specific attributes. We clearly know that the services are doing a great job on training their cyber workforce. We just believe that DISA, as well as our other mission partners like NDU, have very good roles in helping augment those training and setting some of those standards.
The operational training framework will be organized around specific roles in the DoD workforce. Roger Greenwell, DISA's Director of Field Security Operations, says they aim to define 42 different roles, starting with computer network defense.
So as we look at the various roles that an individual would play, we're making the determination of what's the appropriate training, what is the knowledge, what is the skills, what is the abilities of each person playing one of those specific roles, and working towards the development of more modularized training. That training can then be leveraged across each specific role, or in some cases, a certain training module may be more appropriate to different roles.
Alexander has been telling Congress and public fora recently that another workforce priority is to integrate the capabilities of the offensive and defensive sides of the military's workforce. And while retention has so far been less of an issue than was initially feared, and the military has begun to build effective training frameworks, DoD is still struggling to recruit and train enough qualified cyber warriors. Haller from the SANS Institute says the size of the training pipeline is so far way too small to address the nation's needs.
Full understanding of it has come about just in the last 6 months as we begin to understand that when the White House made it public that the United States had been behind Stuxnet, it became acceptable for other nations to do the same. And we're much, much more vulnerable than other nations are. And where their centrifuges weren't connected to the Internet, no matter what you hear, our power systems are connected to the Internet. And a whole lot of other things are connected. So all of a sudden you say, uh-oh, what does a Patriot missile battery look like in cyberspace? And the answer is very, very advanced cyber skills. And it's those people who are called hunters and tool builders that we're missing. We probably have fewer than 800 of them in the entire country. China probably has 40,000 of them.
You're saying 800 in the United States of America, not 800 in the military.
Yeah, 800 in the United States of America.
Basla, the Air Force CIO, says that's why it's important that as his service faces fiscal constraints and has to make decisions about manpower, it's important to zealously guard the cyber workforce that's been built up so far. He says that hasn't always happened.
In some force shaping measures over the last few years, we had to reduce our end strength. And we did that across the board without paying attention to the different capabilities that the airmen represented. You know, it was a fair way to do it. I'll say it that way. But we did not have the fidelity that I think we needed to say, hey, we only have a handful of these folks with this kind of skill, and we need to preserve and protect those folks. And we've been working to make sure we can identify that small group. I call it, you know, just like in our weapons platforms, low density, high demands kinds of skills. And we need to get to that place.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.